The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello and welcome to Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thanks for joining us. We're starting a new series today with our good friend David Renfro. The series, Revelation, Letters to the Seven Churches. Dr. Bob Wilkin is going to talk to David Renfro right now. Here's Grace in Focus.
Hello, this is Bob Wilkin. I'm with my good friend David Renfro. David, when did you graduate from Dallas Seminary?
Just recently.
Just recently?
1978.
You were an Old Testament major, right?
That's correct.
Today we're going to be talking not about the Old Testament, but we're going to be talking about Revelation 2 through 3.
Correct.
Now, why is it that an Old Testament guy would be particularly interested in Revelation 2 through 3?
What got me into this was I've done a lot of study in the Old Testament prophets. And, of course, the book of Revelation is the prophetic literature of the New Testament. And it's really interesting to view the book of Revelation, especially some of the imagery, from an Old Testament perspective. There were some things that jumped out at me, these letters to the seven churches. You know, the question that I've had for a while now is, why are they here?
Exactly. And you just spoke about this at our recent conference that we had May 23 through 26. And so we're going to follow up on that. We're going to be doing a little series. We're going to walk through each of the seven letters, probably one per show.
Correct.
And then today we'll have an intro, and then we'll also have a conclusion probably at the very end. And, of course, most of the book of Revelation is a genre called eschatological, in other words, dealing with the last days. And much of the Old Testament is like that, too. I mean, if you want to understand the book of Revelation, you almost need to understand the book of Daniel and many of the prophets, right?
The major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, especially Ezekiel, and at least one of the minor prophets, Zechariah.
But it could be argued, couldn't it, that even in the section dealing with the things which are the seven letters to the seven churches in the outline of the book, which is really not eschatological, even that is better understood with a correct Old Testament background.
I think so. My Old Testament background made me ask the question that I used at the conference, the letters to the seven churches, why?
And
why are they here?
And what is the answer?
Well, I'm going to say, stay tuned.
So we're not going to hear it right away.
You're not going to hear it right away.
Okay.
And the reason why is I want to go through the content of the seven letters, at least a survey of them, and then from there we can come to a conclusion as to why. So why are the letters to the seven churches essentially a prelude to chapter 4, which is still future?
Okay. So we're going to, preview each of the seven letters now?
Well, what I want to do is go over some of the characteristics of these seven churches.
All right.
They are amazing cities. First of all, what I want to do is go over where they are in the book of Revelation.
Now, in the world, they're in what used to be called Asia Minor.
Correct.
Today, it would be more like, Turkey and
on the coast of Turkey, which is still called Asia Minor, but, it was certainly populated and conquered by the Romans, had been for quite a while at this point. One of the interesting things, and I'll probably mention this a few times as we go through the book, it's an area of the world that has a lot of earthquakes, too, which means some of these cities these Christians lived in were destroyed by earthquakes. I think that has a little bit to do with the content of a few of these letters. The Christians in some of those cities suffered horribly, not only from potential earthquakes, but Roman opposition, opposition from pagan, because a lot of these cities were centers of pagan worship.
Right.
So they're living in a culture that is blatantly anti-Christian.
Right.
And I almost forgot to mention the Jews that lived in that area were definitely anti-Christian.
Yes, in fact, the Jews could even blaspheme the name of Christ because they would say he's not really the Messiah.
Yeah, you're right. They would say that, and they would say, following that, they would say, and anybody that says he is lying, or they just drag their names through the dirt, even in their society. So even fellow Jews that have become believers, there's no telling how they treated them.
So these first century churches were, the people were experiencing persecution from various sectors.
Correct. And there were different sources of suffering. Mainly the Christians here were, we'd call it social ostracism, meaning they were completely outsiders of society. They were essentially nobodies.
Okay, now, there are seven letters, seven churches, but only one of these seven is one that we have a New Testament, complete New Testament letter written to, right?
Ephesus. Yeah.
Ephesus gets Paul's letter to the Ephesians.
Right.
But aside from that, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea, we don't have separate letters to those churches.
No, we do not, but it's probable. Of course, we know that Paul spent a lot of time in Ephesus.
Right.
And Ephesus was, as we'll see in the next broadcast, was a queen city of Asia Minor back then. So it made sense that Paul would spend a lot of time there, because then his disciples could go to the other cities that are around Ephesus. Guess where the other six cities are? Around Ephesus.
Yeah.
They're in the western portion of what's now Turkey, and they're within sometimes 50 miles from each other. And so I'm sure, I have no doubt that Paul, after discipling people in Ephesus, they would go to another city and start evangelizing that city. And so I think Paul had a lot of knowledge about these cities.
Right.
When he was ministering in Asia Minor, there in Ephesus.
And what repeated themes do we see in these seven letters?
The seven letters are structured pretty much identically. Let me go through it.
Sure.
The structure is real clear. There's a destination to the angel of the name of the city.
Right.
Then there's the speaker, who is Christ. And there's a different description of the speaker. But all of the descriptions of the speaker in all seven letters go back to how the risen Christ is described in chapter 1.
Ah, okay.
So it's unique to that church. It's appropriate to that church. One or more of the characteristics, but all of them come from the description that John has, that he had in chapter 1, of the risen Lord.
Right, right.
And like I say, it was appropriate to what was going on in that church. And we'll see some of that as we go through these churches. After that, almost all of them have a section on commendation. In other words, the Lord, and I'm paraphrasing here, I like what you're doing, blah, blah, here, here, and here.
So he would find some things that he could praise them for.
There's only one church that he didn't praise.
No commendation for one church.
No commendation for that one church. Then after that, there is usually a rebuke, but there are two churches that don't get a rebuke.
Ah, okay. So five of the seven have areas that require rebuke.
Correct. I have this against you. And then he goes into a description of what's going on at that point.
Yeah, in fact, all seven letters have the expression, I know your works, right?
Correct.
So the emphasis in these seven letters is not on the faith of the seven churches. They're all churches. They're all made up of born-again people, at least those who are truly in that church, mm-hmm. truly in the body of Christ. But he's focusing on their works, that which he could commend and that which he could rebuke.
Right. That's common throughout all of them. I know your works. And in a lot of them, as we're going to see, their works don't measure up to their faith, or their faith is not expressed in their works to the extent that it should.
They may have lost their first love.
Exactly. Yes, you're right. And every church had some kind of problem, whether it be, even if they weren't rebuked, they still had problems of enduring horrible suffering in some cases.
But there's also this holding out rewards for those who would overcome or be victorious, right? Is that in all seven letters or just some of the letters?
Pretty much all of them. It may be a reward, it may not be, but what happens also is after the rebuke, in most cases, the Lord does an exhortation. Here's what I want you to do.
Right.
You know, I just criticized you, and here's what I want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's another section called threat. And the threat is, if you don't, I will respond a certain way. And then the last one is the promise to the overcomer. That is the classic, he who has an ear, let him hear. And that is common to all seven churches.
Oh, that expression, let
Correct.
Him hear. Okay.
So this section here, Revelation 2 and 3, is pretty much a major section of the book of Revelation. It's one of three major sections. Chapter 1 is the vision that John has on the Isle of Patmos. He gets a vision of the risen Lord. And then there's chapters 2 and 3, the letters, and then 4 through 22 is all future stuff. But that's the outline of the book of Revelation, which is found in verse 19 of chapter 1. You know, write down the things you have seen. That's chapter 1.
Right.
The things which are. That's chapters 2 and 3.
Right.
And then the things that shall be after these things. That's 4 through 22.
And that deals with the tribulation, the millennium in chapter 20, and the eternal state on the new earth in 21 and 22.
That's correct.
Well, this is exciting, and I think that it's important for us to realize that these letters are pivotal in what we would call free grace issues, because people who come from a lordship salvation perspective take these letters to be saying, if you're not an overcomer, if you're not a victorious Christian,
right,
then you're headed for the lake of fire. And they see these rewards for the overcomer not as something which only certain believers receive. They see those rewards as something every believer receives. So if you're not an overcomer, you're not a believer.
Right.
And so when we go through these seven letters, I think we'll actually be understanding how this ties in perfectly with free grace theology.
And then, of course, there's the dealing with some of the salvation topics like, behold, I stand at the door and knock.
Yeah, Revelation 3:20 is often used as evangelistic,
misused that way. We're going to discuss that. We're also going to discuss about, you know, if you're not hot or cold but lukewarm, I'm going to vomit you out of my mouth.
Yeah, and that's another big one.
That's a big one that's
people
used
use
some
that to deny eternal security.
Exactly. And so we're going to discuss a little bit about, is that really what that verse is talking about?
So can you, with your DJ voice, tell everybody to get ready for Rumbling on the next show?
Are you ready to study?
All right, we'll keep grace in focus, and we'll be discussing the first of the seven letters, the letters to the church at Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2. And what are those verses? 1 through 7.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Did you miss an episode of Grace and Focus that you really wanted to hear? Just come to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. And we have all our past episodes right there on the site. In addition to this, we have all kinds of other free resources available for you. It's all designed to help you mature and grow in your understanding of Scripture. So come visit us at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On this program, we keep our requests for financial partners to a minimum. But if you are interested in becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus, you can find out how to do that also at faithalone.org. Our team is really great about answering questions, comments, and feedback. If you've got some, we hope to hear from you. Let me give you our email address so you can do just that. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the letter to the church at Ephesus. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.